The numbers of people who hunt in our country are small compared to what they were a century or two ago. The food system, grocery stores at all, made it a lot easier to get food than to go out and kill it ourselves. We'll set hunting for food aside for a few minutes here and focus on trophy hunting. You know, a hunter goes out and shoots a notable animal and brings back a trophy, like the tail or ears or the entire head of the animal suitable for mounting on a wall or someplace. Recent research out of Oregon State University considered trophy hunting in a conservation-supportive context and found it lacking. Chelsea Batavia is a PhD candidate in the OSU Department of Forest Ecosystems and Society and is the lead author of the research, which also includes Michael Paul Nelson, Chris Derremont, Paul Paquette, William Ripple, and Arian Wallach, published in April. Chelsea Batavia, thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So give us some background here. What has been the relationship between trophy hunting and conservation?
Well, I think that people who are following this issue are familiar with the story, that the idea is that usually a Western, either an American or a European trophy hunter will pay a relatively large fee to go into, we're talking kind of in an African context, let's say to an African nation, and they'll pay that fee for the permit to go on a guided hunt and shoot an animal and bring back a trophy. Sometimes the meat is dispersed among the villages, and that money, some portion of it, ostensibly goes toward conservation in terms of maintaining land and wildlife-based uses rather than conversion to, you know, pastoralism or agriculture or something like that. So that's the linkage that people often make. There are a lot of questions, though, about the sustainability of this practice, both in terms of the effects on the wildlife populations that are being hunted, and also in terms of kind of a more social context, where is this money actually going? There's, of course, a lot of oftentimes corruption and fraud, and so money doesn't necessarily flow back to the communities it's meant to benefit, and therefore it doesn't necessarily support their welfare or their development or the conservation purposes that it was meant to support.
The model sounds on its face like a very Teddy Roosevelt-era model. I mean, yes, we're taking wildlife and taking parts home, but we're also taking care that the habitat is conserved. I mean, was there an assumption that it roughly did work that way?
That's kind of the basic premise of the trophy hunting model. And you're right. I would definitely agree that this falls in line with the Teddy Roosevelt kind of North American model of conservation, where we are, maintaining wildlife so that we can continue to use them and sustain wildlife populations for current and future generations of human use.
So then what sparked the research, if this is something that has been going on for as long as it has? Did something change that made you take a look at this?
I was actually working on a separate research project, also about trophy hunting, that was sort of precipitated by all of the aftermath of the controversy around Cecil Lyon and his killing. As you know, there was a lot of public discourse and media coverage of that event, and there was also a lot of academic activity that was going on. And so I, along with several of the co-authors on this paper, as well as some others, were working on what we call a content analysis, basically a careful reading of literature, academic literature, to try and ferret out how are people talking about the ethics of this practice of trophy hunting. And so that paper is still in the works, but as I was reading, I was doing this careful review of recent literature published just in the past, 3 to 4 years. And it struck me that there was this huge issue, in my mind at least, which is that we are cutting off animals' body parts, to put it quite bluntly, and mounting them on walls. And nobody was really talking about that. When they would kind of hint at this, there's ethical issues or people have expressed moral opposition to this practice. But nobody was really talking about it in explicit terms. And at a certain point, I felt like that was a huge gap and something that needed to be said. So I kind of went off and started this other essay, and some of my other co-authors kindly joined me, and that's where the project came from.
The essay is called The Elephant Head in the Room, A Critical Look at Trophy Hunting. It's in Conservation Letters, a journal of the Society for Conservation Biology. Chelsea Batavia at Oregon State University is the lead author of six. You can join the conversation on the exchange. Your thoughts on trophy hunting and whether there is a valid reason for it, either through conservation or something else. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to join the conversation by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Cecil the Lion was rather surprising in how big that story got. And is that partly because people had a name for this lion before he got shot?
Yeah, I mean, I can only speculate on that matter. I'm definitely not an expert on kind of the media buzz. I think that having the name, having the emotional connection, that lion was at the forefront of a research program for a group based out of the UK, and so as you say, very much a public figure. And so for a public figure to be shot and killed is shocking, just as, you know, to have a human public figure killed would be shocking. And so I think that kind of brought trophy hunting as a general phenomenon more into the public eye.
The content analysis you mentioned that you were undergoing, Chelsea, is this strictly on scholarly writing, or is it more general than that?
That one is on scholarly literature. The point is to understand how conservation scientists are engaging with the ethics of trophy hunting. Here the premise is that if you're going to make an argument supporting trophy hunting, say that this is an appropriate practice or something that we should be doing, you are inherently making what we call a normative or an ethical claim. You're saying that we should be doing something, and if you're going to make that sort of claim, you need to engage with the ethics of it. So some people just talk in kind of strictly descriptive or scientific terms, saying this is what trophy hunting does, this is, you know, it's having this effect on the population or this effect on the local community, and that's fine. But once you stray into something closer to the advocacy realm where you're suggesting that this is a worthy practice or a beneficial practice, then you need to be dealing with the ethics. So that was the topic of that.
I'm glad you mentioned the scientific angle on things, because what we're talking about here, ultimately, when we're talking about the ethics of trophy hunting, it's much more a sociological question than any sort of hard science, right?
Yeah, I mean, not even sociological. Ethics is a discipline in the humanities, whereas sociology is more of a social science. Mm-hmm. But yes, this definitely, it bridges both of those, because it's both ethics, both concerns, you know, what people do believe, values, kind of descriptively, as well as, you know, we can make arguments about what we ought to believe or what we ought to do. And that's kind of the traditional purview of the discipline of ethics.
Let's take a call. We have Paul in Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're discussing trophy hunting with Chelsea Batavia, a PhD candidate at the Oregon State University's Department of Forest Ecosystems and Society.
Good morning. I'll start with this. Trophy hunting is anathema. It is arguably one of the sickest things that we do as human beasts. It's the ultimate expression of acquisitiveness and the acquisitiveness of the culture that we've developed over the last 10,000 years. That's where I can start, guys.
Okay, it moves on from there.
I do have a story. In my work, I wind up visiting a lot of different people over time, and at one point I met a multiple Boone and Crockett record holder. And he had stuffed animals, he had great huge grizzly bears, he had an enormous bearskin rug, and I decided in protest that I would do a teddy bear skin rug. And I mentioned that to a friend of mine, and somebody called up to my office and said, Paul, somebody's putting something in your car. And it turned out that this person had found a 4-foot-tall giant teddy bear. And I strapped it into the car and made all of my calls that day with a giant teddy bear. He's still sitting on the sofa in the house. I never had the heart to make a teddy bear skin rug.
You couldn't even skin the teddy bear.
I couldn't even skin the teddy bear. You know, I had a record fish one year when we were kids, but we subsistence fished when we were children. Mm-hmm. And the idea of harvest from time to time when it's necessary, yes, I can see that. But this has nothing to do with that. This has only to do with ego.
All right. Thank you for that.
Everything else, every other argument in favor of it is sophistry. that's what I've got to say.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate that. And thanks for sharing the story about the teddy bear. So, ego, is that something that came up in the scholarly research you did about the ethics of trophy hunting?
Not that, nobody that I read has talked about that. I think that ego is sort of implicit. I want to be a little bit careful because I'm definitely not out to launch kind of ad hominem attacks against trophy hunters. Mm-hmm. This isn't meant to be a personal assault on anybody. It's more about kind of the social and cultural situatedness of the practice. When you look at this, like you pointed out, the Teddy Roosevelt, the Boone and Crockett, that legacy, it ties into this underlying cultural narrative of male chauvinism, of white supremacy, and obviously there is some ego tied up in that. But I do want to be a little bit careful. I'm not suggesting that people who are trophy hunters are just inherently bad or evil people, right? It's more about stepping back to look at what this practice signifies, because even good people can be involved in bad or inappropriate practices.
You know, when Paul brought up the Boone and Crockett measurements, though, and these are like the certifications of how many points on a buck that you shot, that sort of thing, and it got me to wondering if there's any mixing of types of hunting. I mean, can you keep a trophy head of a deer you shot for that end of things, but still eat the animal so you're making use of it? I mean, is there much mixing of those?
Yeah, I mean, this is well known. That ultimately is the question about what are the motivations of the hunter, and we know that those are mixed. A hunter is probably not going to go out just for one singular purpose. You're right. It might be to acquire some meat, to enjoy an experience in nature, to have a social occasion, and also perhaps to take a trophy head back. I guess for me, I just like to I'm stepping back from, because motivations are kind of muddied and mixed, we can't really judge those, we can't separate them out. So I'm stepping back and asking, in that claiming of the trophy, what sort of a relationship are you expressing in terms of how you perceive and interact with non-human animals? Is that objectification and commodification often of the animal, is that appropriate way to relate with a fellow sentient, emotional, intelligent, and social being? And I would say no. In general, it's not.
Have you had many discussions with trophy hunters? Because I'd be curious to know if they've really thought much about it, other than, I did it with my dad and he did it with his dad and we just do it.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had the opportunity to do any, systematic work. I have talked to people who hunt, not big game hunters, of the sort who pay to travel to Africa, but just local, along the lines of taking the head or the antler of the buck. And I believe this is all just anecdotal. I want to be clear about that. I'm speculating. But from the people I've talked with, it is very much unreflected upon. It's a cultural practice. It's a social practice. It's something that they were brought up into. But I think that those sorts of norms and values can be the most, I'm going to go ahead and say, the dangerous ones, the ones that you don't even know are there until somebody points them out. So that was part of the impetus behind this paper, was to point them out and maybe have people take a second look at things that previously they wouldn't have thought that carefully about.
Have you had a chance to look at some hard numbers on trophy hunting and the prevalence of it? I would imagine it has declined over time, as hunting has generally in America anyway, but I don't know about the rest of the world and what you found out.
I haven't done that kind of careful analysis. I believe the numbers are declining somewhat in some countries, but I can't speak systematically to any of that.
So I want to point out something else that comes into the mix here in terms of trophy hunting, which is the decision by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to allow elephant parts to be brought into the country, which they hadn't been. Mm-hmm. And then that decision was reversed rather quickly. What was the story there?
Well, I mean, in the Obama administration, they had gone ahead and put a ban on the import of elephant, quote-unquote, trophies from Zambia and Zimbabwe. And then, as you know, this past, whatever it was in the fall, I believe, that decision was reversed. And then they reversed that decision. And then I believe that the latest is that they have since reversed the reversal, but it's currently being litigated. So as of now, the decision is to evaluate the import of trophies rather than on just to have a nationwide ban to evaluate on a case-by-case basis from individual hunter applications. But there is no blanket ban on the import of elephant, quote-unquote, trophies from those two countries anymore.
We were talking about trophy hunting here on the Jefferson Exchange with Chelsea Batavia, a PhD candidate at the Oregon State University Department of Forest Ecosystems and Society. She's the lead author of an essay called The Elephant Head in the Room, A Critical Look at Trophy Hunting, co-written with Michael Paul Nelson, Chris Darimont, Paul Paquette, William Ripple, and Arian Wallach. Published in April of this year in Conservation Letters. Join the conversation on the Exchange. Have some thoughts on trophy hunting and its value or not to either society or hunter or ecosystem. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. In terms of ecological effects, and again, you're the Department of Forest Ecosystems and Society, so you're looking at interrelations, I'm sure, here. But is there a benefit in any way to herds that are culled or something by trophy hunters?
I am not an ecologist or a wildlife biologist, so I can only speak to sort of what I've read as a secondhand observer. There is some research talking about those effects where, for example, trophy hunting might be used to control the abundance of lions and allows for more robust populations of local herbivores. And there is some talk about hunters, you know, as you know, in this country, for example, reducing population pressure of herbivores and maintaining ecosystem health or resilience. So there is some evidence, and there's a lot of research being done on those questions, but also evidence of kind of adverse ecological, biological, and evolutionary consequences on the wildlife populations or species.
There's a key phrase in your essay, situating this practice in a Western cultural narrative of chauvinism, colonialism, and anthropocentrism. We argue trophy hunting is morally inappropriate. In its most basic terms, are you saying that taking an animal's body part is really a case of I won and you lost?
I won and you lost, and also you are nothing more than an object to me. It's objectification, and it's a purely instrumental view of animals, and that may have been tenable 100 years ago, but given what we know about animals, non-human animals now, I join many others in arguing that that's not an appropriate view to have of these individuals. As I mentioned earlier, they're sentient, conscious, intelligent, emotional, social, and trophy hunting is immensely disruptive to them, both as individuals and to their populations.
There's an interesting section in the essay, too, where you compare this to the actions of soldiers in World War II. What went on there?
I was reading about this the practice of trophy taking, and I kind of strayed into some bizarre literature about the taking of human body parts, and a lot of this is in kind of ancient human cultures, but then I ran across this, I think it was an anthropological examination of practices, where Western soldiers would actually take body parts of the Asian soldiers that they had conquered. And so the analogy that I'm drawing, again, this is just by way of analogy, by way of illustration, was that, and the argument that author made was that doing that allowed them to kind of quell their consciences to say, this isn't really a person that I just killed, this is just a thing, and therefore I can take a trophy of this thing. And that's a mode of reducing what we call cognitive dissonance, the idea that you don't want to think of yourself as an immoral person. We have a generally strong taboo against taking human life. And so if you're in a situation like if you're at war where you're killing people, you need to do something to sort of reconcile yourself to that notion of yourself as a killer. And objectification of the people who you're killing is one way of doing that.
Yeah, objectification in its purest sense. I mean, if you broke off a part of the boat you sank or something, that would be a different thing from breaking off a part of the person.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we do. We have kind of an innate as well as an argued sense that there is a difference between inanimate objects and things that we create, like boats, versus living beings like people or non-human animals.
Chelsea, the phrase consequentialism shows up a few times in the essay, and I wonder in what sense it is used here.
Consequentialism is one of the major schools of normative ethics, and the idea of consequentialism is that you evaluate the appropriateness or inappropriateness of an act based on the outcomes that it produces. So some people might have heard the names Jeremy Bentham, for example, John Stuart Mill. Both were proponents of utilitarianism, which is a pretty influential form of consequentialism. And the idea is to produce the greatest good for the greatest number, as Gifford Pinchot said. So if an act, no matter how it is brought about, produces overall net benefits as opposed to costs, then we can say morally that's an appropriate act. Consequentialism is often counterposed against deontology, which is another major school of ethical thought, and the idea there is that you evaluate the act based on some quality of the act itself, the motivation of the person, whether the act adheres to certain predefined duties or principles, are you upholding all necessary rights and permissions, things like that.
The essay, again, it's called The Elephant Head in the Room, A Critical Look at Trophy Hunting, does get to the point of rejecting trophy hunting as a legitimate conservation tool could open up much-needed space for innovation and creativity. What kinds of things would you like to see occur instead of trophy hunting?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that we offer some suggestions in the paper. A lot of people propose the idea of ecotourism. That's a really controversial question. We don't know if ecotourism is actually enough to fill any void that would be left in the wake of trophy hunting. I genuinely don't know what the answer is, and I don't think that we have the science is still out on that one. But, you know, ecotourism and photographic tourism could certainly be upped to fill part of the void that was left. We suggest another option where there's this reducing emissions from deforestation, forest degradation, which provides funding for communities who are going to maintain land in uses that sequester and store carbon. That would be an option. Grasslands do store quite a bit of carbon. And then other creative funding mechanisms like that. I think that the point is that by leaving trophy hunting as a valid option, it's going to force us to think about new options that maybe we wouldn't have considered previously.
All right, so instead of sticking with the old stuff, think about new ways to get things done. All right. The essay, again, is called The Elephant Head in the Room, A Critical Look at Trophy Hunting in the April 25th issue of Conservation Letters. Chelsea Batavia at Oregon State University, the lead author among six. Thank you for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much.
All right, take it easy.